Okay. So I thought for a while. I know last year during Kayets we did test cases. So I tried to figure out whether there were test cases about the role of Balabat in the sock, which is much, for obvious reasons, much harder to find because, you know, non-poskim don't normally write tshuvot. But I did think of one, and possibly a second one for next week. If people have other ideas of what you want to do during Kayets, please let me know. But in the meantime, we'll try with test cases, which I do think highlights a lot of the issues we've been talking about. Test cases always do that. So that's the modern controversy over birth control. I'm not going to get into all the halachic pratim, but I'll give you enough that you can at least understand where this all comes from. And then we'll deal with the topic at hand. Okay, so the basic halachic overview. Anyone was with Ed Meisher sharing that? Asher, you were? I gave basic halachic overview a while ago. Yes, no? You were there, Nightsider, no? Okay. I don't know. Okay, so no one was there. That's fine. Okay, so basically in birth control there are two main halachic issues, one of which we will not deal with at all because that's not the issue that people discuss in this context, and one we will. So the one we won't deal with is in cases when you think birth control is mutter, what types of birth control are mutter and why? Right, that's a whole, you know, field of study into in of itself, and that we're not dealing with. Okay? Usually the birth control discussion or the family planning discussion, and that people talk about halacha that's more heated in this regard. One more point. Part of the reason that the discussion of means is really not discussed as much is because, according to almost all poskim, with a few exceptions, the pill, assuming there's no problem of what we'll get to in a minute of bitul peruvu, in terms of a hashchas zera question, which is really the question in hand when you're dealing with means, the pill really doesn't have any problems with it. Because, you know, it's not working in that way, right? It's changing the way the body functions, specifically the woman's body. So there really is no problem of hashchas zera. So that solves a lot of the practical problems. It has its own problems with it, and, you know, there are obviously always problems with putting hormones in your body, and some people therefore can't take the pill, and then they have to deal with other ones. So it is a big discussion, but that's not what I want to focus on. The second question is family planning. Primarily the beginning of marriage. The secondary question is spacing. But we'll focus really on the question of pushing off having children at the beginning of marriage. So this question primarily, in almost all of the discussion, and again, there are outliers. There are arguments that are offered by Raya Bleich and Bin Nitzivot Halacha that could push in a different direction, though when I spoke to him, he denies that it is relevant for this discussion. Most people think that that the real question at hand is bitul peruvu. Is it usher before one has had children to push off having children at the beginning of marriage because of bitul peruvu? And that's the main halakha question that people are dealing with. Okay? There's a secondary question, which is, what if you've had a child, but you haven't been mekayim peruvu, right? Or you've had multiple children having mekayim peruvu, right? You have five boys, right? You still haven't been mekayim peruvu. What about then? Can you push off having more kids? What about the mitzvah of sheves, the chadome? It's three pages, Reuven. What? Breath control. The main question, really, that the most heated question, shall we say, and you find this across the spectrum, is the question of family planning at the beginning of marriage. So I'm going to try to boil down the summary of poskim as I see it. I will not, so don't ask me, give you my own opinion on this. My own opinion does subtly diverge from anything I'm going to tell you today. But I won't tell you where I fall out. That's not for now. The summary I'm about to give you is, after I said it to him, Rabbi Willig was maskim, that it resonated with him that my summary was getting at the core of the issue. So I will take that as a haskamba that this is a basically accurate approach. Basically, for most poskim, the question could be divided as follows. Okay? when we're talking about pushing off Puruvu at the beginning of marriage, we're not talking about being Mevatel HaMitzvah. What are we talking about? Being Docha HaMitzvah, right? Delaying a mitzvah. Yes? So, the poskim break down as follows. Assuming, some poskim think that there is a active maaseh component to the maaseh, to Puruvu, and therefore, even though it seems like we're only dealing with dichoy, with delay, we're not. We're dealing with active bittul, right? Because there is a maaseh mitzvah at the beginning of marriage, right? Rabbi Willig, for example, is a very strong proponent of this position. The Rambam in Perek Yudalad, Halacha Aleph, and this is echoed in Shulchan Aruch, in Simen Ayin Vav, says that once you are married, Chayev Adam Livol Ishto Bechol Ona, right? You have to be with your wife at least once per Ona, and your wife can't be Mocheles until you're Mekayim Puruvu. And that's how the Rambam formulates it, that's how the Shulchan Aruch formulates it. From this, right, Willig and many other poskim, even though they don't state it so explicitly, basically argue that, and again, this doesn't relate to the question of is Puruvu purely a mitzvah b'maaseh, purely a mitzvah b'totzah, the minchas chinuch and others. Leave that aside, it's not that, but there is at least an element of Puruvu which is maaseh. Meaning, right, the way Rabbi Willig reads it is that you have an active mitzvah to attempt to be mekayim Puruvu at least once per ona. From when you get married. The result of that shita being that if you push off having kids at the beginning of marriage, what are you doing? What? A bittul mitzvah saseh. Okay? If you think that's the case, so then Puruvu, then the chiyuv to Mekayim Puruvu would force you to have children, or attempt to have children as soon as you get married, unless, what klal could I bring in to mitigate the argument I just made? Oseg b'mitzvah patra min ha-mitzvah. Right? Unless I can construe an argument that even though it is a bitul mitzvah saseh, right, I'm allowed to do it because of oseg b'mitzvah. Right? So, there's a group of poskim who are mityachis to Puruvu from this action perspective. Some of them, therefore, simply conclude that it is usur, totally, to have to use birth control to bring a marriage. Others try to create some sort of oseg b'mitzvah, right? Some say that in a very mitzvah form, right? Like, maybe only oseg b'talmud Torah or something, because that's the example the Rambam gives in Perek Tesvav Halacha Beis, right? That if you're oseg b'talmud Torah, you could push it getting married, and then Rav Aaron extends that from getting married to having children, that if someone was in fact learning three siddharm a day, and if he would have a child, that would detract from that, so he could employ oseg b'mitzvah. Other people attempt to extend it in a more vague way and say there's a value to having a profession and a house and be settled, you know, financially and emotionally before you have children. So if you're in college, if you're in graduate school and you can't quite support yourself, so you can push it off for a year or two to be mekayem that mitzvah, right? But that is one sort of branch of the question, which then subdivides into two. On the other side of the equation, you have people who just deny that there's any maaseh component to Puruvu and say the mitzvah of Puruvu is only to, at some point, make sure that you have a boy and a girl, and therefore, this is not bittul ha-mitzvah, it's only ichor ha-mitzvah, and the standards for ichor ha-mitzvah, as opposed to bittul ha-mitzvah, are much lower. And therefore, we can bring in arguments such as, you know, the emotional health of the couple, or the financial health of the couple, and things like that, to justify pushing off marriage, having children at the beginning of marriage. Okay? That's, I think, I could be wrong, but I think 90% of the articles are going to break down. Right? They're going to be people who claim that Puruvu is fundamentally only bitotzah. You just need to eventually get to that result, and therefore this is not bitol, it's only ichor, and therefore the standards for what allowed to push it off are very low. Then there are going to be people who say there's a maaseh component, right? There's a chiyuv akarbafta de gavra to attempt to have children once b'chol ona, and you're actually being mevatlet. So then within that side, you'll have the people who therefore say birth control is usur. And then you'll have the people who say, no, even if that's true, there's elements of osigmimetra, and people might combine these two, right? That sort of summarizes. Now, no one actually spells it out the way I just said, but I think that basically summarizes 90% of the articles and shuvot that exist on the topic, at least on the fundamental issues, okay? There is an exception. There are a few exceptions to this. Notably, what we'll get to in a minute is Rav Schechter. Rav Schechter does not fall into this dichotomy. Rav Schechter actually says that it is only ichor, but says ichor is the same as bittul. That there's no halachic difference between ichor and bittul. And he has other arguments, but we will return to his arguments in a minute. So he actually doesn't fall into this dichotomy, but keep that dichotomy in mind, okay? We're good so far. This is a really oversimplified summary of the discussion. Yes? Okay. Now, practically, the minhag of many morei hora'a throughout the world, for some reason, has been to give couples a heter for 3 months, 6 months, a year, on condition that when the heter runs out, that they come back to the posek. Now, with the exception of Rav Henkin, the best of my knowledge, with the exception of Rav Henkin in Bnei Banim, no one argues that this 6 months is fundamental, and the halachic argument they seem to be employing is that they think fundamentally using birth control is mutter, or they don't see halachic issur, but they think that the rabbi should be in charge of deciding when it is right or wrong to be using birth control. Right? That's a reality on the ground. Okay? Yes? Don't ask me exactly to explain why this is the phenomenon, but that is the phenomenon. Okay? So what we're going to look at here, okay, is, again, I don't want to go through all the halachic issues. There was an article that responded to the trends that I just said by Rav Moshe Kahn. So we'll see in a second. But Rav Kahn is a rebbe for many, many years in Stern. It says right there, right? He teaches the Gemara Shir for a long time, the only Gemara Shir in Stern. He teaches the one of the Gemara Shirim in GPATS, the other one being taught by Reb David Nachbar, Shlita. Now, what he's responding to is that within the YU orbit, right, the two main poskim in the YU orbit, arguably the two most prominent poskim in the YU orbit are Rav Schechter and Rai Willig, who both think birth control is usser. So there was a phenomenon that he had to deal with, which is that people were going to, the guys that his students were marrying were Talmidim, inevitably of Rai Willig or Rav Schechter, or Talmidei Rai Willig or Rav Schechter, and they were saying it's usser, or somebody else in that sphere was giving them the, you know, the 6 month dispensation or something like that, right? And he had to deal with the fallout on the Stern side. Right, so he wrote an article analyzing it, where he took on Rav Schechter and argued on Rav Schechter. Again, I don't want to be machri on the halachic issue, but I want you to see how he is midrash to the meta questions we've been dealing of the role of autonomy, okay? So that's what we're going to try to focus on. I've tried to cut out the pieces that give you a little bit of scope of just what's going on halachically, and then focus specifically on the meta issues, okay? And like I said, I'm not poskening. You cannot poskin based on this. I've cut out most of the halachic discussion. So even if, in theory, I could give you a thorough shear, this is not it, right? If, God willing, according to most people, Bikarov etzlechem, according to Rav Bazak Barachok etzlechem, Mashi, yeah, right? You know, you want me to be your chassan teacher or something like that, then I will think about discussing the halachic issues, but even that, I will probably send you to an actual morei hora'a, and we'll dodge the question then. You never know. Probably at some point I will make my position known, but maybe not. okay. So now moving to the article, okay? As a Talmud teacher at Stern College for women for almost 3 decades, I have found myself confronted in recent years by an increasingly greater number of requests to decide questions of marital issues. My students seem simultaneously pulled in opposite directions. On the one hand, many of these women are classically monorthodox, independently learned, and fluent in halachic texts. On the other hand, they appear increasingly reliant upon rabbinic authority to decide matters that may fall under the rubric of personal autonomy. Nowhere is this tension more poignant than in questions of contraception. So, here you go. This opening to his article is why I thought to talk about this article, right? Is that this is a very personal issue where people want autonomy, right? And yet, the reality of Psak is, again, either Poskim say it's Usser, right? Or they come up with this middle shita of it's Usser unless you have a dispensation for a rabbi for 6 months and come back to me. So the result is that these people who, this is a very personal issue and they want autonomy, end up being reliant on rabbinic authority in a very real way, and there's the tension is created. Okay? So many of my finest students are unaware of the latitude offered them by halachic precedent. So, right, what does he say already? That he, right, before he hasn't spelled it out yet, but right, what does he think? He says, right, what is he motivated to for sure? Right? In what case would the autonomy argument be completely irrelevant? Right, if there was no shita that it is mutter and you're just violating the halacha, then, as we've said, right, when it's autonomy versus theonomy, right, if there was peh echad, the will of God was its usher, it doesn't matter if you want autonomy. If all poskim peh echad said the halachic system says it's usher, so it's usher, right? Autonomy would lose to theonomy, right? In this case, even heteronomy. Right? But given that there are shitos who think it's mutter, right? So what does that mean? There's autonomy. Right? That there's at least a potential for autonomy because the halachic psag is not predetermined. Right? Okay. So now he says, so people don't know that. Now, some people don't like this because, as we pointed out, if you think that the people who are supposed to be defining psag are simply poskim, the fact there are multiple shitos doesn't mean that the individual has latitude. It means the posek has latitude to choose amongst different opinions, right? So he's already assuming that if there are multiple shitos, that there should be some role to autonomy. But that, again, one could argue on this. They are often embarrassed by their wish to postpone procreation as it reflects a lack of faith, and they approach me with painful trepidation to tell their stories. Some of them and their prospective husbands intend to pursue graduate study. They are torn by a perceived difficulty in managing baby and career. Others, who may be leaving their childhood home for the first time, are struggling with a lack of confidence in their ability to assume parenting roles. And I suspect that there are further reasons that these young men and women do not know or cannot articulate. They frequently ask their rabbi because they believe or have been told they must do so, sometimes because they perceive rabbis as benign paternal authorities who will help them cope with their anxieties. We as rabbis must give our young men and women proper counsel and guidance. In that context, I would like to consider the following questions. Does a couple's wish to delay fulfilling the commandment to procreate require rabbinic permission? If so, what are the halachic determinants of the discussion? If not, what are the consequences of rabbinic involvement into this personal matter? At the outset, we must distinguish between two categories of positive Torah laws, right? So first, what he's going to do is he's going to make, right, what is the first thing he has to do to say there's room for autonomy? He already implied this, but what's the first thing he has to do? Methodologically, people.
So that there is a tzad leheter.
Yes, he needs to show there's a tzad leheter, right? So that's what he's going to do, right? Rav Kahn is a wonderful person, right? I have met him a few times, or was in Ashir for at least one semester, right? No one has ever questioned his status as Talmud Chacham or integrity, right? He's not going to say that, oh, people are sad and scared, let's let them violate his room. He's not going to say that, right? He may be taking on Rav Schechter, right, which is a big deal in the YU world, right? This, to the point where this article, if you notice, is published in Mail Rote, which is the journal of YCT, right, which is not a normal place for someone who's very much in the YU orbit to publish an article, but that was because classic journals didn't really want to take an article that argued on Rav Schechter explicitly, right, took on Rav Schechter directly. But, right, the first thing he has to do is at least make his halachic argument. So that's what he does. At the outset, we must distinguish between two categories of positive Torah laws. Some positive commandments are time-bound. Once a designated time passes, the opportunity to fill them is gone. Eating matzah on the 15th day of Nisan is such an example. Other positive commandments, such as procreation, are not limited to a certain time. If a man fulfills this mandate later in life, the fulfillment is just as valid as that of the younger man. Okay, so first question is, right, on my opening question. He, right, and you see, right, the summary that I gave you, right, shining through. Right, the first question he thinks he has to address is what? What? Well, yeah, but specifically, right? At the outset, first question, we must distinguish between two categories positive to our laws. Right? Is it? Yeah, is it mitzvah b'maaseh, mitzvah tzotzah, right? That's the first question he asks, right? Is this, right, just a mitzvah which is, which is b'tzotzah, which he assumes, right? Now, he doesn't even address the other possibility, right? So there are different types of mitzvot. Maaseh b'tzotzah, ones that have a time-bound component and ones that don't. He assumes Peruvu is only tzotzah-oriented, and therefore it's only Ichor. As I pointed out, Rabbi Willig thinks that's not true, right? Rabbi Willig's argument is based on the claim that no, there's a maaseh component to it, namely the chiyuv mitzvot ona. But he assumes that, right? But nevertheless, the question remains whether the delay itself is permitted. So there are three halachic issues that we must address. Now, the three halachic issues, as we'll see in a second, are not the three halachic issues that one would have necessarily started the conversation with. They're the three issues one must address if one is writing an article to argue with Rosh Hechter. And that's why I gave you note 17, where he explains how he wrote this article to criticize Rosh Hechter. There are three halachic issues that we must address. One, is a delay considered a violation and cancellation of the commandment itself until it has been fulfilled, right? Is ichor bittel? Yes? Two, does the concept of zrizin makdim lemitzvah, the conscientious, fulfill the commandments expeditiously? Wow. Zrizin makdim is so much easier to say than what I just said. Okay, never use that explain. The conscientious fulfill the commandments expeditiously. Wow. Expeditiously? God. Okay. Wow. Okay. I would have translated its reason personally alacritously, but okay.
That's so much better.
Yes. I would really just say its reason, Makdim and Lemitzvos. Necessary to prompt fulfillment, which is really a sub question of the first question, which is even if you think that Ichor is not actual Bittel, does the Chiyuva's reason, Makdim and Lemitzvos, create something Kain Bittel? Yes? Three, does the fear of an early demise, Cheshin Lemisa, also necessitate a prompt fulfillment. Hi, Chaim. It is, but as we'll see, this is Rosh Hechter's position. So look at, the next thing is note 17. This is his summary of Rosh Hechter's article. Refers to Rosh Hechter in an article, Halachic Aspects of Family Planning in the Journal of Halachic Contemporary Society in 1982. I remember once when I was in fourth year Halach HaMaisa, there was a question. According to Rosh Hechter, would one be allowed to use a birth control pill on Shabbos? I remember asking Rabbi Stein, I'm like, this is a trick question. Because Rosh Hechter holds that if birth control is usser, it's not usser mishum refuah, but it's usser for other reasons. I don't know what the answer to this question is supposed to be. At which point he told me, what does Rosh Hechter think about birth control pills mitzad Shabbos if they were mutter? So if you ever get that question, you will have to figure out what the answer is to that one. What? Or I've just told you the answer, posits that a delay in the commandment to procreate is forbidden. He based this view on the following principles. And as I said, right, Rosh Hechter is, I think, unique in this one, in claim one, which is the Chazon Ish's conclusion that a delay in fulfilling a positive, non-time-bound commandment is viewed as a temporary cancellation of the commandment. Right, Rosh Hechter is the limitav yediati, the only shita who holds this, who thinks that Puruvu is only, it's only an ichor, but Ichor equals Bittol, based on Chazon Ish, as, we'll see what happens with the Chazon Ish in a moment. Two, is reason Makdim and Lemitzvos, the conscientious carry out the Torah's mandates expeditiously. Three, Chayshin Lemisa, and this is Rosh Hechter's addition, which is not only that, but the reason we can't let people push off having children at the beginning of marriage is because halakhically we must be worried they're going to die tomorrow. And therefore, again, this is a way of creating a, time-bound component, we must consider the possibility of an unexpected early demise. Maimonides' position that delay in the fulfillment of the commandment to procreate is viewed as a violation of the law itself. Shulchan Aruch's conclusion that a postponement is forbidden. While I have deep respect for Shachter, I must respectfully disagree with his reading of the Chazon Ish. I believe the conclusion of the Chazon Ish is unequivocal to permit a delay. As he shows in the body of the article, the Chazon Ish, in his Hava Amina, says that Dichoy equals Bittel, and then says, that is not true. Dichoy is obviously not. I have spoken to several Rosh Yeshiva at YU who will remain nameless, who are Talmidim of Rosh Hechter, who all their response was, yes, I've tried to get Rosh Hechter to explain to me why he thinks the Chazon Ish concluded based on his Hava Amina. You can look at the Chazon Ish yourself. I think it is unquestionable that this is in fact only a Havamin of the Chazon Ish. The Chazon Ish in fact rejects it.
I mean, can we go over this here about hiding what the actual lach is?
I don't think that's what's going on. I really have no idea. I mean, maybe he just agrees with the Havamin of the Chazon Ish, and that he. I really don't know. I don't know.
We did discuss that earlier.
I know, but I spoke to several Rosh Yeshiva who are Talmidim of his who tried to. I don't know. Look, Rosh Hechter can say it from his own authority. That's fine. It happens not to... I don't think it's a Chazon Ish, but okay. I believe the conclusion of the Chazon Ish is unequivocal to permit a delay. As far as the principle of Zrizin Makdim and Lemitzvos is concerned, I have attempted to show that it does not apply if a delay would enhance the fulfillment of the commandment. The principle of Chashin Lemisa also does not apply with respect to the commandment to procreate based on the ruling of the Netziv. When I'm not on record, I can tell you what a different Rosh Yeshiva said about this particular position. It is true that Maimonides does not permit a delay. However, I have noted to show based on Mahari Kash that the Shulchan Aruch does not follow Maimonides' view, and the citation from Ibn Ezra is not necessarily positive that the delay is forbidden. I have elaborated on this last point in footnote 10. Okay. So, to summarize what happened here, as again, halachically, I don't want to get into all the details, but as you see, he basically takes the argument that Puravu is bitotzah, therefore it's only ichor, and therefore it's mutter, if there's a justified reason, right? That's his position. Rosh Hechter doesn't think this. Rosh Hechter thinks that ichor is equivalent to bittel, and therefore thinks it is usher. Okay? That's where we stand. But Rav Kahn has done the first thing that one needs to do, what needs to do. Again, agree, disagree, agree with Rosh Hechter, agree with Rav Kahn, doesn't matter, right? Rav Kahn has clearly met the first bar in the discussion of autonomy and halacha, which is the first thing one must talk about in autonomy, again, is what?
Do we have it?
Is there a heter we can talk about, right? You lose your autonomy, right? You have no right to claim autonomy when halacha says something pe'echad. Rav Kahn has at least, in his position, in his opinion, either concluded unequivocally, conclusively, that it is mutter, mikradin, or alternatively, that at least there is a tzad, lahakil, and that the unequivocal position by Rav Shechter that is usher is not right. That is Rav Kahn's conclusion ad kan. Okay? So we've met the first bar. Okay? Now let's move to the conclusion of the article. Okay? So many rabbis, generally speaking, are opposed to contraception, but would grant a reprieve to a childless couple for a limited amount of time. Generally 3 to 6 months. After that time, the women are expected to stop using contraception or consult the rabbis once more for a dispensation. Yet because the women are again embarrassed or feel fearful, they either avoid the rabbi and suffer ensuing guilt, or they conceive a child whether they feel ready or not. Paradoxically, their initial submission to rabbinic authority creates a subsequent aversion to that same authority. The rabbis are faced with an internal contradiction in their position. If they grant any dispensation to a childless couple, they are relying on the lenient interpretation of the law. Apparently, they conclude that a delay is permitted. If so, they need not qualify their decision or limit its validity to an arbitrary period of time, whether 3 or 6 months. On the other hand, if delay is forbidden, then no moratorium should be tolerated because no rabbi has the authority to permit that which is forbidden. He must find a halachic basis for it. Presumably, the rabbis who issue temporary dispensations are functioning as pastoral or spiritual counselors who wish to encourage the couple to establish a faithful house in Israel. In that case, they should clarify their role to the couple and tell them directly that they speak as spiritual advisors rather than as halachic decisors. So, Rav Kahn's next move is what? Is to say, look, if you allow a delay at all, then what?
It's allowed. Not completely, but...
Then what are you doing halachically? You don't accept Rav Shechter's argument, right? You must think it's mutter maker adin. So now, right, unless you're Rav Henkin, but we'll leave Rav Henkin out of the discussion for now. Unless you're, besides for that, everybody who thinks that you're allowed to push over 3-6 months a year thinks fundamentally that Rav Kahn is right, lahalacha, that you're allowed to push it off. Okay? And yet they're saying you should come back for 3 to 6 months. So what does that mean?
That's not in the halachic realm.
Right. That they're now poskening on, this is his claim, they're on non-halachic matters. Right? So, his critique off the bat is, if you're poskening, quote-unquote, on non-halachic matters, right, are you allowed to do that?
Sort of.
Well, what does he say?
You can tell them, but not as a...
Right. Halachic. If there's transparency, yes, but what's his assumption? Why does transparency help?
Because you're not really poskening of halacha.
Because he thinks that a posik poskening on non-halacha is not binding. Right? Right, but how could one argue on him?
Das Torah,
right? Right, one way of arguing would be, and this is probably true, is that a lot of the more yeshivish posts we're giving 3 to 6 months might think it's mutter, but think there are Torah values at stake, we'll call Das Torah issues, and they think what? That the posek has the right to make decisions that are not quote-unquote halachic, right? So, but you see, he's taking a position, and the anonymous people he's critiquing obviously took a different position. He's also taking another stance on something that we discussed, which is what, right? He's valuing what? What element of autonomy? Transparency. Letting people understand what the halakhic what you're doing, right? Right? Not everyone, right? And these are often the people who believe in Das Torah, think that's important, because if you think that the role of the posek is to say, tell what's right, not necessarily what's usher and mutter, but what's right, right? Sometimes what comes with that is a value of being opaque, right? Of giving your position and not explaining it, not giving people the autonomy, right? So you see that he's, right, swallowing up, right, certain decisions, right, certain assumptions very clearly, right? He's saying, first of all, right, you just follow the flow of his article. First of all, we can't even talk about autonomy or the value of autonomy until something's mutter. But once something's mutter, then we're out of the realm of pure halacha, so then in the realm of, let's say, Das Torah. So he assumes that people don't have binding authority on that. Therefore, if you're going to act, you need to at least provide people with transparency so they understand what they're doing. Right? The people he's polemicizing against, right? At this point, we're no longer polemicizing against Rav Schechter, right? Rav Schechter thinks it's just usher. If it's usher, everyone, right?
It's usher.
It's usher. If you think it's usher, and at least a posting who thinks it's usher shouldn't with integrity say it's mutter. Right, interesting question. You should send somebody to somebody else and tell them there are other positions they could look at. But right, that's a different story. But he's asserting that there's a value to giving people autonomy, especially in things which are not purely halachic, and giving them transparent, allowing your process to be transparent to let them see what's going on. So now he, right, what I teased out of that, he now puts on the table. Many young people are at this time struggling to reconcile the contradictory objectives of their education. They've been taught to develop their talents, pursue their education, become self-sufficient financially and emotionally. On the other hand, they are taught humility and subordination to rabbinic authority. At best, the couple is confused about the extent of their autonomous decision-making. The conflict is at once philosophical, theological, and psychological. And we discussed this, right? The question of autonomy in halacha is not just halachic. It's philosophical, right, and theological, right? How fundamentally do you think there's autonomy and theonomy deal with each other? And psychologically, right, we talked about this also, that practically in a world where autonomy is celebrated, any limit on autonomy, even if legitimate, causes psychological angst. So there's potential for grave harm in this situation. Young people experience great pressure to marry at an early age and are frequently overwhelmed by the combined pressures of marriage and parenting. Many mental health professionals they have consulted describe epidemic problems among young people who discover their identities and define their aspirations and values only after marriage. They too frequently feel trapped by an earlier decision, often find their way to psychotherapists and sometimes divorce courts. The problem is much more poignant than when there are children involved whom neither parent is prepared to care for. These tragic cases may contain a measure of harmful rabbinic enmeshment. in the first footnote here that I, not the first, but the footnote I included here, he just noted how sometimes this confusion, right, of people feeling trapped in this, right, can really, really mess with it, and transparency is important in both directions, right? Look at footnote 1. At times, the woman does not reveal to the rabbi the full dimension of her predicament. To illustrate how this could result in unintended harm, I would like to present the following clinical example. A psychotherapist related to me the case of a childless 19-year-old married woman who suffered from an obsessive-compulsive disorder and severe depression. She consulted a rabbi for permission to practice birth control. The rabbi, apparently unaware of the severity of her disorder, made his decision solely on the basis of his concern for the health of the fetus. Since her medication might harm the fetus, she could use contraceptives as long as she required the medication. At that time, she was also being treated by a psychotherapist who recognized the larger personality issues of her illness. She was emotionally immature and terrified of the prospect of bearing and raising children. The therapeutic goal was to wean her from medication and prepare her for the challenges of motherhood. Meanwhile, the patient knew that she could delay childbearing only as long as she took the medication, and she consequently refused to alter her drug regimen. In light of the rabbi's decision, she stymied the therapy and subverted its goals. Right? We noted sometimes the lack of transparency is really bad because
you don't know what to poskin is.
Yeah, you don't know what to poskin, and the person listening doesn't know what they're hearing. Right? If you said it's fundamentally mutter and I could give you a heter even if you were on medication, right, then that wouldn't have happened. Okay. In fact, considering the body of the article here, in fact, there's considerable compatibility between halakhic precedent and psychological thinking. Young people who think that their concern for financial autonomy reflects a doubt in divine providence might draw comfort from the wisdom of the Midrash HaGadah that compares a poor person to one who is dead. On this point, the Gur Aryeh explains the desire for self-sufficiency and autonomy is innate. It is not a luxury for the select few or something to dabble in during one's spare time. It is essential in sustaining a wholesome, enriching life. Indeed, a person who fails in this endeavor is lacking a crucial dimension of life. In this view, an absence of concern for one's financial future is an expression of personal folly and not a testament to higher faith. Maimonides makes a similar point. It is the way of sensible people to obtain a job that will support them, then to buy accommodation, and then to get married. For it is written, who has built a house and has not yet dedicated it, who has planted a vineyard and has not eaten of it, who has betrothed a wife and not yet taken her. Stupid people start by getting married, then buying a house if they can afford one, and then towards the end of their lives try to find a job or else support themselves by charity. It is written in the curses, you shall betroth a wife and another a man shall lie with her, you shall build a house, but you shall not dwell in it, you shall plant a vineyard, but you shall not gather its grapes. This is to say that if one's actions are in the wrong order, one will not be successful. In this light, even though Maimonides believes a man should marry by the age of 20, he must first obtain a degree of financial security. If, however, he has not achieved this, then he may or perhaps should delay marriage. And since a fundamental objective of marriage is procreation, it's quite reasonable to assume that just financial security is an important prerequisite for marriage, so too should it be for starting a family. Therefore, since young couples today are marrying while pursuing an education and profession, delaying procreation is a valid and logical consideration. So Rav Khan Lashitaso thinks that it's not usser. If it's not usser, then we can bring in
philosophy,
like good advice, good halachic advice, even though not pure halacha. There are other poskim who attempt to take the same argument, right? This argument that there's a fundamental value to having financial security before you raise a family, in a more formal direction, saying that even if you think that Puravu is a masa mitzvah, that you're actually being mavatlet, we can employ osig b'mitzvah padra min ha-mitzvah based on this, and allow someone in college or graduate school to push off marriage for that. for example, there's an article by Dr. Yitzhak Rones, where he makes this argument of osig b'mitzvah padra min ha-mitzvah. He points out that the Shevet HaLevi, Im Zachurli Nachon, but I might be wrong, and I think Chelik Vav Tshuva Reish Chav Bet, Reish Chav Aleph, is it Reish Chav Aleph or Reish Chav Bet, and the Tshuva Shevet HaLevi, says that the Rambam would hold that any Osek B'mitzvah could allow pushing off Puravu, and I will strenuously objected to this, but so Lishitazo, he doesn't need to employ Osek B'mitzvah, but other people do. So now he continues, the need for rabbinic restraint in marital matters is supported by weighty halachic precedent. Rivash, now this is one of the most tenuous parts of the article. Rivash was questioned by the permissibility of performing a marriage between a man who has not yet fulfilled the commandment to procreate an elderly, wealthy woman beyond the years of reproductive capacity. The young man sought financial security and the woman desired a companion, but the community resolved to stop the marriage and consulted Rivash. His response provided the basis for future decisions. He replied that the community did technically have the right to compel the young man and prevent the marriage. However, the practice has been for many generations not to coerce marriage or object to one. In his pithy phrase, the sages of past generations hid their eyes when it came to marital matters, even if the couple's actions were forbidden so long as the marriage itself was not illegitimate. He further states that rabbinic coercion could lead to arguments in legal battles, that the rabbinic function with regard to marriage should be limited exclusively to adjudicating disputes between husband and wife. Based upon this ruling, Rama limits the role of rabbinic courts in matters of marriage. Now, without having looked at the Rivash inside, is the Rivash a raya for what he's endorsing?
Not
white?
No, the Rivash says, what don't we do? Ain, what's his Lashon actually, in the actual Rivash? Ain kofin, right? Right, we don't use the powers of kfiya to stop somebody from getting into a marriage that doesn't allow pervu. He's making a huge jump and saying, if ain kofin, then what?
Don't
paskin. Right? But is there a difference?
Yes.
Yes, right? Meaning, what's he saying, right? He's equating total negation of autonomy, meaning physical forcing someone, with paskining, which mimela closes autonomy if someone chooses to follow psak. Right? All the Rivash says we don't physically force people. Did he say we don't paskin?
No.
No, we do paskin. Right? Right, those are not the same, right? The fact that we don't, you know, actually totally, you know, take away your autonomy physically doesn't mean that we don't not recognize your right to autonomy in a halachic sense. Based upon this ruling, Ramah limits the role of rabbinic courts in matters of marriage. Although Shulchan Aruch states that the courts coerce a man to marry at the age of 20, Ramah claims that we no longer adhere to such a policy. Even if someone who has not fulfilled the commandment to procreate wants to marry a woman who is incapable of having children, the established practice has been to not interfere. Likewise, a man who has been married for 10 years and remains childless should not be pressured to divorce his wife. This concludes Ramah should be established policy in all matters of marital relationships. Certainly then, according to Ramah, this policy should be adhered to in marital matters of behavior when the halacha itself does not permit. We must apply the decision to past generation to contemporary scene. Young people are marrying at a young age, frequently when they are still psychologically immature and emotionally insecure. Furthermore, they must advance in a culture that requires a long apprenticeship and graduate study or otherwise before they are financially self-sufficient. As rabbis, we must maintain our role as facilitators of their growth and allow them the latitude to make decisions based upon needs that are unique to each couple and that only they can know. We must accept the fact that we cannot know the deepest motives that impel young people to turn to us for permissions to delay procreation. Nor are we qualified to discern the nuance of such blanket terms as anxiety and marital jitters, when one person's mild apprehension may be another's insurmountable emotional torment. Following Ramah, it may be that we best serve our young people by granting them the opportunity to decide when they are ready for the noble task of parenthood. Perhaps what is required is less their faith in us than our faith in them. According to Halacha, he should... Whatever. I don't know how that got in. Fine. That's the end of the article as far as I'm concerned. Okay? So, right, from his article, we can pull out, right, a very, right, distinct kav chashiva and the role of halacha and autonomy. Right? So the first point, like I said, is where is there no role for autonomy at all? When something's aser. Right? God wins over your autonomy. Okay? Next question. Does he think there's a role for autonomy, meaning giving people the right to choose when there are multiple halachic positions?
Yes.
Yes. Now, one could argue on that right off the bat by saying that what? If somebody comes to you,
then you're the paskin.
Then you have the right to paskin. They've bound yourself. If you remember the beginning, right? In a chanami. But he thinks that even when you ask a shayla, there's a positive benefit to the posek providing you with autonomy, with giving you the range of positions. A posek could just as easily say that what?
You should just pass it.
Yeah, where was the role of autonomy, so to speak, for the questioner?
After the
before. No, before. Is who are you going to ask? But once you've asked, it's not obvious, right? His claim that a posek, once someone has asked your opinion, is required to give the range of positions, right? If someone goes to Rabbi Willig, now, Rabbi Willig will tell you that if somebody comes to him looking for a heter, do you know what he tells them?
Ask someone else.
Please don't ask me if you want a heter, right? Sometimes they'll push him, and then they'll be like, no, this is different. I think you'll agree. And he'll say, please don't ask me if you're looking for heter. And then they'll say, no, we want you to pass it. And then he'll say, it's usher, right? But, so Rabbi Willig will often give people that choice, but it's not obvious, halakhically, that one has to, right? That's point one. Next point he says is what? that why should we give people autonomy, right? Because this type of autonomy.
Psychological, right?
Meaning, first of all, this is a very personal issue, and not giving you that autonomy is personal issue. So if I can find room, I should. And theological and philosophical, meaning if we value autonomy, and I'm not convinced something's asur, then there's a value to it bringing you into the halakhic process. Right? Especially on personal issues. Okay? Another issue, he says, is what? Is that, at the very least, what should you do? You should be transparent. Right? And the last thing that comes out of it is that he says that when something is not purely halachic, he thinks, what does that mean? That the posek shouldn't decide it.
And should only give
and advice. Therefore he should only give advice and not act as a posek. Okay? So you see a lot of the issues we've talked about, the value of transparency or autonomy at what stage in the process, right? He's actually methodologically, right, very upfront about the assumptions he makes. But now let's talk about some criticisms that could be raised against him. Now, not that could, many that were, right? So one, right, critique that was raised against him was that he's wrong halachically. I'm not sure it's zebatzad, okay? Another one that was very vehemently raised by people in the community, and by this I don't just mean the people who think it's usher. I mean even people who think birth control is mutter, right, in the YU community got very angry at it because they said, you're wrong because you, right, forget the Haredi community who very often employs Das Torah. The tone of this article basically says that should be the role of a rabbi in birth control?
Give all possible options.
Or not even anything, right? The last line, we should have faith in them to make their own decision, right? But what does that mean? What's the implication? Why would you say you have faith in them to make their own decision, right?
They have the right to.
What? They have the right to, but it also implies that it's, right? It's a halakhically neutral, right? But even if you don't generally accept Das Torah, right? What is his dichotomy is either something's halachic or it's just advice. But let's say you believe in Das Torah in general. Is that a dichotomy?
No,
there's halacha psuka, and there's things which are just advice, and there are things in the middle which...
So what the Torah wants... But
what the Torah wants, and therefore the posek has a role. It's not just stam advice. It's not as binding as psak gomor, but it's...
It's stronger.
And many people got upset by this article because the implication of it was, look, there are multiple shitas out there, and therefore rabbis shouldn't be allowed to paskin, and all they should do is give advice and leave the decision totally up to the individual. Right? But many people said, that's not the case, right? That's not a dichotomy. There are things which are not actually usur, right? Assuming he's right, there are things which are not actually usur, then halacha still has something to say about it. Okay? Now, one could argue this generally, right? Like, you know, about Das Torah in general, right? But there were people who made the cogent point that even if that's true and not true in general, not every issue in life has overpowering value concerns. There are at least...
some here.
Some issues. What's the big one here?
I mean, it's marriage.
It's purvu,
yeah.
Right? Now, just to show you how this doesn't break down right and left, right? Perhaps the most vehement critique that I heard of the position that denies that there is a value issue going on, a halachic value issue here, was Rabbi Dov Linzer at a Yom Iyun for YCT, who is not the natural person you would have expected to be ripping on kulos in birth control. In fact, I know from other shiurim I've heard from him that he thinks that Mekradin might be mutter. And yet, let me read you a piece by Lichtenstein first, and then we'll come back to his critique, okay? Ravaron, in an article on Puruvu and Sheves, I'll summarize most of it outside so we can move, but you can read it inside. It's very nice.
What year was this written?
He didn't write it. It's on the Gush files. Oh. Like a summary of a sicha he gave many years ago. A shir he gave, rather. According to Tosos, there are two mitzvahs. What?
The Gush files.
The Halakha Gush files. I quoted this in a paper once, and I footnote, I said, this comes from the colloquially known as Gush file, also available in VBM. but I couldn't help myself. It's YU, so I can get away with these things. Okay, that is one of the beauty for those of you going back. You can do things like this. You also write articles like I did at some point of Saul Kripke and Rav Lichtenstein naming theory in Lumdus. You can do things like that. It's great. I understand. None of you know what I just said. I got that. Okay. Anyways, so famously.
10th grade.
Exactly. Famously, there are two mitzvos, according to Tosfos, in the realm of Puruvu. One is called Puruvu, and the other is called Sheves. Right? According to Tosfos, Puruvu is Daraisa, Sheves is Darabanan. Puruvu means you should have, you know, a male and a female, and Sheves means you should have kids. Right? A lot of kids, or more kids, or whatever. Okay? So the mission on Gittin says that if someone is a Chati Eved Chati Ben Choren, which means because he's a Chati Eved Chati Ben Choren, he can marry
no one,
right? Or Chati Shivcha Chati Bat Choren, right? Or he can't marry anyone. We force the master to free the Eved of the Shivcha, okay? Beis Shammai said this, Beis Hillel originally said another way, but Beis Hillel eventually is moved to Beis Shammai, okay? So Rishonim ask why, when the Gemara says that the reason that you force the master free the Shivcha, one of the reasons it gives is because Lo Tohu Bera'a LaShevet Yitzara, right? The world wasn't created for to be void, it was created to be fruitful. So Tosvos there says that Sheves is Derabanan, and for some reason the Derabanan here is worth being Docha LeMitzvah, not the Doraisa Perubu. Maybe we draw that in for Shivcha, because she's a woman, she's not Chayvin Perubu. Maybe she is Chayvin Sheves. Rav Aaron raises a different suggestion. Look at the end of this piece. We might suggest a fourth answer as well. The mitzvah of Peruvu applies to the individual. It casts a personal obligation upon each individual, like the mitzvahs of Sukkah and Matzah, for example. The obligation of Sheves, by contrast, is not formulated as a command, but rather as the Almighty's will. Right? Think about the pasuk that Gemara is quoting. Right? How do we know that there's a notion of Shevet? What's the pasuk? Lo tov ra'a l'shevet yitzara. The world was created to be fruitful. Right, that's not a regular chiyuv. What is that?
It's like a general idea.
That's God is telling you, this is the point of the world. Right? Statement by Creator. This is why I created world. Right? This is very powerful. The assumption is that an Oved Hashem must fulfill the will of the Creator. The Sefer Chinuch adopts a similar approach to the end of the discussion of Peruvu. He writes that neglecting the mitzvah is a particularly grievous sin as it reflects the individual's disinterest in fulfilling the will of his creator. From the perspective of God's will that mankind reproduce and populate the world, it makes no difference whether one fulfills this mitzvah personally or causes someone else to fulfill it. All people bear the obligation to increase the world's population. Accordingly, the Mishnah means that only due to the mitzvah of Sheves can we compel the master to free his servant, for he too shares the responsibility of populating the earth. We should not, however, have the license to force the master to free his servant, so that the latter should fill some personal obligation that he bears. Okay, leaving aside the detailed lumdus in this Tosfos, right, what's Rav Aaron's claim? That why does the Gemara invoke Lo Tov Ra'a L'Shevet Yitzara to explain why we would force the master to free his servant or his maid servant to Mimikayim Sheves?
Because God's will.
But it's God's will. Now later on, right, the Rishonim raise the question, there's an Isser to free your slave. Now, one of the possible solutions, Rav Aaron suggests later on in the article, is what? This is not a mitzvah, this is the mitzvah. Right? If ever there was going to be a time when I could waive the problem of Lolam Behem Tavodu, would be when God himself said that you're preventing the point of the world from being fulfilled. Right? So, coming back to one of the critiques raised, and just for strength of the argument, right, I will basically summarize for you Dov Linzer's position. He put it like this. Modern left-leaning Jews often criticize Haredi Jewry for being overly formalistic in halacha and missing the forest for the trees. Right? And left-leaning people pride themselves that even if their community overall is not as successful in dikduk of mitzvos, we at least get the general values. Right? That's how we characterized it, okay? I may be oversimplifying, but it was a long show. Okay? And yet, when it comes to Peruvu, Haredi Poskim, what do they inevitably say?
Aser.
No, they say it's not just about the halacha; it's
about the idea.
The value. We're supposed to have a lot of kids, right? And what? Coming back to Rav Kahn's article, right? What do many people in the modern Orthodox community say when someone tries to tell them they shouldn't be on birth control? Shouldn't be on birth control for too long.
Just the idea behind it. Don't worry about halacha.
Stop giving me the values. It's mutter, it's mutter. Don't give me advice. And so then he goes, basically, al regalachas, hypocrites, right?
If ever there was a mitzvah where there is das teche, right, where there is a value, where the Gemara is explicit.
Does not give very much weight to it, by the way.
What?
Saying das teche does not give very much weight to
it. Fine. If ever there was a time where it's not just about the technical law, can I find a het there? But there's an importance to seek out the Ratzon HaTorah. It would be the mitzvah where God himself tells you this was the purpose of the world was created, that it's not a mitzvah, it's the mitzvah. Right.
Just respond that autonomy is also a value, and therefore the overarching value picture, which is I get to do what I want because of autonomy.
Correct, but is that right?
No,
that's exactly the point. And the criticism, right? So the criticism that was levied against the article was that whether or not this is what he said, right? What seemed to be Yotze was that even in Peruvu, which is value laden, right? If it's something is not pure halacha, the posik doesn't have a right to say this is what you should do. Right? And some people criticized and said, look, some people said, you're just wrong halakhically, but other people said, and I don't just mean double edged, I don't think he actually criticized this article, but it is yadua in the Olam that the day this article came out, the other person who was teaching at GPATS at the time came into the graduate program in Talmud at Stern, came in and yelled at him for hours, right? And that person is also not known as Big Machmir, and I have heard from other people, because, right, the implication of the article bothered them. Even if you think that it's a plausible halakhic position, the argument essentially that because it's not usur, there shouldn't be input, even strong input by people who are experts in Torah, right, rubbed many people the wrong way, because, right, autonomy isn't automatically granted to people simply because something's not usur.
So, I mean, I
wasn't there. I don't know how much he yelled, but this is what I heard. This is the Mipi Ashmua Lamdu, you know?
I think we discussed this about Torah.
It's not like everything in Kosh Mipi Ashmua.
Yes.
The question of, even if it does reflect, you know, clear Jewish meta values, does that necessarily make it obligatory or binding? Or
so it doesn't necessarily
warn you of these meta values and let you say, okay,
correct, and
I have this choice in the system.
Correct, and for that reason, right, now, one could, you know, therefore come up with a position which is, right, where a lot of these people do come out, which is, okay, even if you're right, a posek, there's enough value to transparency, right, that we should allow you into the halachic process, and we should tell you, right? Rav Khan is right, we should tell you when something's not pure halacha, right? But when a posek tells you, right, come back to me in 6 months, right, the posek could present it as halacha psuka, or the posek could present it as
advice,
but not like halachically neutral advice, right? There's a very serious person in this yeshiva, what?
Kofar. Never mind.
There's a very serious person in this yeshiva who Bikaron thinks that birth control is mutter, and yet if you speak to him about birth control, he'll tell you, come back to me in 6 months. He'll tell you Meikara, though. It's not because I think it's usur. I think he'll tell you Meikara Din. I think there's nothing stopping you from pushing it off a year or 2 years. But that's not necessarily the good halachic thing. If you're trusting me enough to ask me the question in the first place, right, then trust me enough to come back in a few months. Not because I need to grant you a heter, because you should discuss this with someone objective, right, who is more grounded in halacha than you are, right? At least discuss it in, you know, and rethink the issue in a few months, right? Which is some sort of middle position, right? Where you're granting autonomy through transparency. You're not trying to impose your authority, right? But you're also not leaving it up to pure autonomy, right? You're bringing the person into the process, but, right, forcing the person to recognize that they might not have the expertise. And by the way, I don't just mean halakhic expertise. There's another expertise which is involved, which is
psychology, people person.
Yeah, you have to. When you're first getting married, you've never had kids. You don't know what it's going to look like on the other side of that. Right? There's a good reason to go to somebody who, forget posig, who has been married and has kids. Right? Zegam chashuv. Right? Right? You know, this person's name I can tell you afterwards. I don't think he would be upset if I told you, right? He, for the record, was, for people who this helps, was my Misadar Kedushin and Chassan teacher, therefore the person I first discussed this issue with. Right. What? Rav Schreiber. Yes. Yes, it was Rav Schreiber. It was Rav Schreiber. Yes. Okay. So, right?
It's also a people person.
Right, so I think this issue, right?
Also happens to be a people person.
Right, this issue and the response, right, and the tensions that were raised on both sides, right, highlight a lot of the issues we've been talking about, right? The extent to which autonomy is important for psychological reasons, for theological reasons. But on the other hand, right, the extent to which, right, there are limitations, either on pure halach grounds, you think it's aser, obviously, then there is no autonomy, or alternatively, you think that the only role that people have in autonomy is choosing the posik. Once they've chosen, they don't have the right to be allowed in the process, which Rav Kahn criticizes, but you could see somebody arguing on. And then the question of, what about values? Right, does a posik weigh in? Either totally authoritatively, if you hold Das Torah in general, or Das Torah just in the realm of Puravu, let's say, right, that it's a value laden halacha, or even just to weigh in, maybe not conclusively, not as a psak, but as not just an opinion. Okay, right, so you see the tension on both issues, right? On the one hand, the value, the potential value of autonomy. On the other hand, the dangers of granting people total autonomy, which is not being true either to pure halacha or even to halachic values. And you see how this is played out to be fair, as you heard from me, a lot of oral discussion, because a lot of this hasn't been written down. And I'm telling you from conversations that I've heard with post-game of how they feel about how this issue should be dealt with. I just want to... quickly, and then you can ask me a question afterwards, okay? There's another article I gave you here by Rav Shurlo, okay? I did not plan to go through all of it, so I'm not actually behind. Right? I didn't plan on getting all of it. I just want to read you his outline here, right? So if you look at his first paragraph, he said, "Kasha rabim nichtav kan sikum katzar hamaver la sugya." Right, so now he says, I was asked to write it. There are many positions I'm going to write it. I want to emphasize, I talked about it with the post-game, and I've always turned to each couple independently. And what did I do?
I explained it. I put it out in front of them.
I gave them a daf makoros, right? Kidei shaloyit kaimu birabanei dorenu divrei yitro lemoshe navol tibon chaverim adrim shal rabim atzibori. And right, so what does he say? Right, and he, in order that people won't think now that right won't suspect him for not acting halachically, so now he's putting a sheet on paper for the public. Now, what do you see in his position?
Transparency,
right? With who?
The community
and the Perskin getting the asking the Shaila, right? You see that again. He thinks that it's an important enough issue that people should be brought into his process. Now he notes. If you turn to the last page, these are his first two footnotes. One is Rovam Donatzira Biskatsiani that Misayem Od Beater Garif Vikalino Xehim Beater Mikhachal Rav, right? The Datil community are very machmer about this. Two, Baulama Rabini Mikubal Shabanazukli Taitim Rav Kodam Shit Kule Dat Rishona. In the rabbinic world, people ask before they the first child, Baram Lachashem Rabot Shil Yusuf Benezuk B'Tchum Zani Mitkashel Avin Manish Al Lachazu Migal Al Lachosh B'Chol Chanim Fanim Liyut Shul Rav Shem Udabar B'Tziyut Murkev B'Chari Gavi Lachazu Shev B'Ragil Novan Minanim Yiduim Yechasin Matnim Et Apsika B'Deut Shem Rav. He said, I don't understand. In most issues which are more complicated than this, we don't require you to talk to a Rav. And here, it's a simple issue, and everyone asks. Lozu B'Vad El Shul Barur Mao Shikol Adash Rav. I don't even know what post-game are bringing to bear. And what benefit does he have over the couple? Maybe you're saying it's to prevent bias. It has weight. But then the rabbi should be approaching it in his role as pastor and not his role as post. Right, so he also is a very methodological claim, right? He first of all values transparency, and he also doesn't like Rav Kahn, this issue has become one where, for no apparent reason, we require people to talk to Rabbanim. But what's the flip side? Why do people in this area probably want people to speak to them? Because, right, why do they frame it in quasi-halachic terms?
Because it's really important.
Because it's really important, and, right, he is docha this batzad, right, there's a big issue of bias, right? We've talked about it before, right? One of the reasons you need someone from the outside is for bias. So he says, okay, then act as pastor and not posek. Fine, but how are you going to ensure the person comes back without using a little bit of authority, right? One of the reasons that people will use authority is because otherwise they can't make sure that people at least hear them out. So again, I don't want to draw a conclusion. I just want to point out the issues. I will, one more point from Rav Shlomo that's important, two points, right, is that one is even he, right, he wants transparency, but he doesn't shy away from making halachic statements. And in one line, right, he says, I want to be clear that when we're talking about tichnun mishpacha, right, family planning, he said, I'm not talking about tichnun mishpacha, I'm talking about tichnun mishpacha gdola, right? He said that, right, he isn't hiding the fact that there's a halachic value here and that when he's making a decision, it's not just halachic. Right, so even he, with the value and transparency, he doesn't shy away from saying that a posek still has a role to explain values that are not pure halacha. And one more thing that he adds that most people don't is that in addition to that, posek doesn't just have a role, whatever role that is, in explaining meta-halachic, he also has a role in explaining political issues in the community. And one of the things he raises is that assuming we think there's not a fundamental value to birth control, right, and we think that it's a choice, one of the reasons Rabbanim should be involved is because what happens if everybody uses birth control and then there's one couple who thinks it's not necessary for them? What inevitably happens, and this is true in many communities, yeah, you look askance at them. Oh, right, they didn't have a good relationship because they didn't have any time without children, right? That's a problem, right? One of the reasons Rabbanim have to be involved is because there are communal costs to allowing people to be makil, because you have to remember, at some level, you have to sacrifice your pure autonomy if there are implications for other people. So one of the reasons that rabbis should, at some level, be involved is because even if there are kulas, if everyone takes advantage of the kulas too much, then even the people who don't need to and don't want to will be pressured into illegitimately taking the kula, right? So just to summarize, right, I think this issue is a good place where you see, and you can read his article, I think it is a nice summary of a lot of the issues. whether or not I agree with the conclusion, different story. For where you see both the values of autonomy, both the level of transparency, choosing post-kim giving you options in non-halachic or meta-halachic issues. On the other hand, the pushback that there's no autonomy when something's actually usher, people who might think that once someone's asked a shaila, they lose that right, and it's not the job of the post-kim to give them a range of opinions, or people who think that either in general or specifically in Puravu, right, certain types of issues, a rabbi should weigh in to ensure halachic values are protected, as well as the attempt by Poskim to even with transparency to educate and make sure people come to the right conclusions. And again, the tension that you see in these articles, I think, highlights a lot of the issues that we've been talking about, the values and dangers of autonomy and authority in the halachic system. We have to go to Mincha.